Shalom Aleichem Rabbosai. Welcome back to the Shacharis for Shabbos. Last time we were talking about the words L'dor HaSam, I believe. That's where we left off. Yes, that's right, Rabbi. It's been only 3 weeks. V'shamu v'nei Yisrael es HaShabbos la'asos es HaShabbos L'dor HaSam for their generations. Now we're at the words Baris Olam. We take it a word at a time here. A word a week. You know, we've managed to cover a word. So we got up to, so Vashomeru v'nei Israel, and the children of Israel shall keep Es HaShabbos, the Sabbath, la'asos, to do it, Es HaShabbos L'dor HaSam. Talks about why it says to do it twice, why it says Shabbos, etc. twice, L'dor HaSam, for their generations. We ended up with the Rekayach, which points out the last letters of the word Es HaShabbos la'asos, Es HaShabbos is five sofs. It's soft. Yeah. And that gives 2,000, which is 5 times 400, hinting at the Tchum Shabbos, which is 2,000 Amos. Right? That's where we finished off. And now we're starting the concept of the next words, Baris Olam, full stop, an eternal covenant. Wow, like you could have a Bris which isn't Olam. It's very interesting. What does it mean, Baris Olam, an eternal covenant? What does it mean, eternal? Find me a covenant which isn't eternal. I've got Bris Mili. You think I'm going to go back on that? It's eternal. Ridiculous. How can you have a covenant which isn't eternal? A temporary covenant is an axiomatic oxymoron. It doesn't work. It's like saying, you know, a kosher pork sandwich. It doesn't work. So what's going on? We got to jump straight into the Torah Shelema on Shemois Lamed Aleph Tes Zayin, which is 31:16. And the Torah Shelema quotes the Medrash explaining that the bris that's being referred to is a promise that no harm will come to the Jewish people on Shabbos. If you're keeping Shabbos properly, the Shabbos will keep you. This is what Bris Olam means. This is the Torah Shleima on Shemois quoting a Medrash. And we're at the words Bris Olam mark. So, we're just at the last two words of that sentence. The Mishnas Rebbe Eliezer, in the 50th chapter, says that the rainbow was a bris made with all mankind. Mark, is that clock going to go off in 15 minutes? Yeah, so we've got every 15. Oh, man.
I was worried.
Wow, mama, she caught it in time. The clock was probably listening going, oh my gosh, I forgot, that's it. It was like, I haven't done my ring bell thing. I better do it, otherwise I've got to disturb a whole shir here. Okay, so the Mishnah Rebbe Eliezer, chapter 50, says that the rainbow was a bris made with all mankind. Another two brisois, were Shabbos and Bris Mila. Who were they made with? Only Klal Yisrael. So a rainbow is a bris for everybody. Goyim are walking down the road and gaining benefit out of the rainbow. Because Hashem has said, I'll never again destroy the world with a flood. But only Yidden are gaining a bris of Shabbos and a bris of Bris Mila. So the rainbow was a promise that there would never be another flood that would wipe out all humanity. Now Mila and Shabbos are promises that will be saved from Gehenna. Says the Mishnah Rebbe Eliezer, there's a special segula that a Jew that keeps Shabbos and he has Bris Mila will be immune from Gehenna. And that promise applies equally to both Tzaddikim and Rishayim. So if you're found to be a 49% Tzaddik, which we learn from Derech Hashem means you're a Rosha, you're just not over the boundary, but you have Bris Mila, a kosher Bris Mila, and you keep Shabbos, interesting that people that can keep Shabbos can be judged as a Rosha, then you're still protected from Gehenna because there's a special Bris that says if you have Bris Mila and Shabbos, you have protection against Gehenna. Now, hold on. What about the concept of justice and recompense and Ashkocha Protis and suffering and your deeds, etc.? What does that mean? Just as a flood is not going to come even to a holy, wicked generation again. If you've got another generation that's as bad as the pre-Mubble flood and they're all going around killing each other like that, then Hashem would go, oh, but other punishments may come. Hashem can do things like tsunamis and wildfires, and he can do earthquakes and volcanoes. He just made a promise, I won't do the whole thing with the flood again. And he can also do other floods, by the way, just not floods that wipe out all humanity. As long that he keeps his word, as long as that doesn't happen. So too, let's talk about a wicked Jew who observes Shabbos and he's got Bris Mila. He'll be saved from Gehenna, But he'll be punished with other punishments. But it's a get out of Gehenna free card. I keep Shabbos and I got Bris Milah. The Lachmei Taida says that just as we find that Hashem punished Bnei Israel with a year of wandering in the desert for every single day that the spies reconteered the land and they came back with an evil report. A year, very good, yes, coming into one of the other different territories there, but that was coming out with Adrian on his sheet. So you've got a year for a day. So there's 40 years to pay off 40 days, right? So too, now come, this is you'll like this. This comes out very good for you. If you're telling me that one of the days of the Meraglim will reconteering the land has to be paid off with a year of wandering in the desert, I've got the double edge to the sword, excuse me. Every Shabbos you keep, which is just one day, is considered a year. That's a year of Shabbos observance. Fair's fair. If I'm going to punish Klal Yisrael with 40 years of wandering for 40 days that they were there, every day you keep Shabbos, I've got to give you a year reward. Fair's fair, right? Otherwise, it's unbalanced to judge me so harshly. The 50 Shabbosos of the lunar year are therefore like 50 years representing an entire Yovel Shemitah cycle, a Jubilee. 50 years of Jubilee. So you keep 1 year of Shabbos. You've kept an entire 50 years of Shabbos. 50 years worth of Shabbosos is one entire Yovel Jubilee cycle. And that is referred to as an Olam. What does it mean, Olam? If you say, I'm going to keep a slave, La'olam, forever, maximum it can be is 50 years. You've got to let him go at the Yovel. 50, you've got to let him. It doesn't matter what you say. He may stay with you for this Shemitah, but when Yovel comes in, he goes free no matter what. It doesn't matter if he says he wants to stay in your service. Only until Yovel.
Yeah.
Then he has to go. Even if he says, I want to stay, he can't stay. All debts are cancelled, everything goes. Doesn't matter what he says. Nobody cares what he says.
Even someone's up
the knock. That's it. Even if he's had it all put through his year, if the next year's Yovel, he goes free.
Wow.
That's what happens. Yovel cancels everything.
Oh.
No discussion, that's the truth. Look it up. Honestly, I'm not making it up. Okay. I never heard that. Okay, but fuck a shame. I heard it now. I don't know what to tell you. Okay. So that's what it means. Listen to this. 1 year of Shabbos is 50 years of Shabbos keeping. 50 years is called La'olam. It's called forever. Forever in the Gemara is 50 years. If I'm going to do something forever, it's 50 years until the next Yovel. What does it mean, Bris Olam? It means a 50-year Shabbos because La'olam is 50 years. 1 year of Shabbos is the eternal 50 years. La'olam forever means 50 years. Halachically. That's another concept between Bris Olam is 1 year full of Shabbos is technically 50 Shabbos. All right. How many Brisen are mentioned anywhere in Torah?
Many?
What covenants?
Bris. Well, Loshen is when Hashem said we have a bris forever. What was the Loshen used?
Bris Olam.
So that's a problem, isn't it?
No, it isn't, because Olam halakhically is 50 years. We so paskin like that.
We want Hashem. We're never going to. Hashem's not going to just keep us for 50 years.
That's correct. Every year that we're keeping is another 50 years he owes us. So right. if you've kept Shabbos for 2 years, he owes you 100 years. 3 years, 150. It keeps adding up.
Fine.
Five. Oh, what? Okay. That's it. Feel like an auction. Do I hear five? Five. 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 Going from the front left. Five. Going front left. Front left. Front left. What are the five that we got? Ivan. What are the five we got? Ivan. Ivan. There you go. What are the Brisson? How many Brisson have we got? You say five. Anyone else?
Yeah. I must have won.
Four.
Okay. Ten. Rabbi, 10. Ten. Here are the 10 Brisson. I'm going to get a Brisson, rather. So it's female. Covenants. Okay, here they are. Number one, the rainbow. Number two, Bris Milah. Number three, Shabbos. Number four, the prohibition against idolatry. Number five, Torah study. Number six, the Leviim. Number seven, freeing slaves in the Yovel. Number eight, the Kahuna. Number nine, the Davidic dynasty. And number 10, that the Jews will have Eretz Yisrael. These are all covenants that Hashem has made with us. A bris by nature binds two parties together. Each of these 10 things connects us to Hashem. A bris olam is something which binds the two parties in an inextricable bond. It cannot be nullified. You cannot undo it. You might welch on your obligations. A man may say, I do not want to circumcise myself, and I don't want to circumcise my son because it's mutilation, and I don't agree with it. But Vakasha, that does not mean that Bris Mila has been nullified. It means you have not paid your part of your premium to get the actual outcome. That doesn't mean that Bris Mila is nullified. It means you don't gain the benefits. It is an eternal change between Jews and everyone else. Ah, Beini Uvein Bnei Yisrael Ais Hila Olam. Between me, says God, and between the children of Israel, it is a sign which is forever. It's an eternal sign, an ice. What is the eternal sign between Hashem and the Jewish people? The Pirkei de Rebbe Eliezer in chapter 18 says this is meant to mean that Shabbos is shared by Hashem and the Jewish people insofar as it is a day of rest for Hashem, and he gave that to Bnei Israel as a day of blessing, holiness and rest. It's the only one of the bris type experiences that God also actually does. God doesn't need the rainbow to remind him not to be naughty. God doesn't have a body to perform bris mila on. God doesn't have to not daven to idols. It's ridiculous. God doesn't need, God doesn't need the Levim or to free slaves in the earth. I'll tell you what God does do, keep Shabbos. In fact, the only reason we keep Shabbos is to mimic him. So this bris is a sign that just as he stopped in the sixth, seventh epochs changeover, so too we do that. He did it, we do it. This is a sign that we're like him. The Mechilta, which is the halachic medrash on Parshas Kisiso 31:17, says, Beini uvein bnei Yisrael osi la'olam, says that excludes the other nations of the world. I think we've discussed this prior. Shabbos is exclusively the domain of the Jewish people, a special present and covenant between Hashem and the Jews. And we're taught that a non-Jew who keeps Shabbos is liable to the death penalty. Why would a non-Jew who keeps Shabbos to say, this is my Sabbath, is over the death penalty? That sounds a bit harsh. Let's look at three different answers I have for you tonight. One, the Me'iri on Gemara Sanhedrin 58b explains that since Shabbos is the sign of a Jew, if a non-Jew keeps it, he's impersonating a Jew and increases the chance of assimilation, thus making him deserving of death because he's essentially acting as a lifnei eva to pull Jews away from Judaism. So Me'iri Sanhedrin 58b. Number two. Others explain that since Shabbos is a special present to the Jewish people, a non-Jew who observes it is stealing from the Jewish people, and the punishment for being over on any of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach is death. Either they have less mitzvahs than us, it's more severe. If they're over on any of the Sheva Mitzvot B'nai Noach, they must die. Three, the Maharal of Prague on the Chedushei Agados, again on the same Gemara Sanhedrin 58b, teaches that since Shabbos is a holy influence that only a Jewish soul can receive, when a non-Jew observes it, his soul is then plugged into an influence that is incompatible with his nature, resulting in his own destruction. This is the equivalent of taking diesel and putting it in a leaded engine, or taking an electricity item and plugging it in the wrong voltage. You're just going to burn out the wiring. That makes sense? It's incompatible. Why is it death? It's not the death God comes along and says, oh, naughty, naughty. It's that what you're doing is so damaging for your spirituality that it will destroy you. The Tolus Yaakov points out that the intimate relationship between Hashem, Shabbos, and Bnei Israel is reflected in the fact that Shabbos is a day that Hashem expresses his love for us. And therefore the Korban Chatas, the sin offering, cannot be included in the Shabbos Musaf service. The Gemara Shabbos 10b and Beitza 16a relate that Shabbos was given privately between Hashem and Bnei Israel even prior to the giving of the Torah. Although the mitzvah was given publicly, the idea of the Neshama Yaseira is a private, secret idea for each Jew. And it is not something to be, God is very careful to make that exclusive. The Medrash that we quoted earlier in Torah Shleim and Shemois teaches that only one who observes Shabbos is designated with the name Yisrael. If you want to be considered an Israelite, the only way to be considered an Israelite is to be Sabbath observant. This is the Torah Shleima on Shemois 31:17, quoting the Medrash Rabbah. The Rambam on Hilcha Shabbos, chapter 13, Halacha 15, explains that unlike any other mitzvah, one who desecrates Shabbos is considered like an idolater and loses his designation as a member of the people of Israel. Now, why is that? That's because Shabbos is absolutely key to the identity of a Jewish person. If you ask, is someone frum, are you asking whether or not they only eat meat which has been ritually slaughtered? You're only really asking about Shabbos. You aren't asking, do they have a flat roof, and if so, have they put a parapet around the roof to comply with the Torah law? You're not asking that. You're asking, when you're saying someone frum, what you're really saying is, are they shomer Shabbos? That's what you're saying. It all revolves around Shabbos. If you're shomer Shabbos, you are considered a Yisrael. Could you just shut that door? If you're shomer, push it, yeah. If you're shomer Shabbos, then you are considered a Yisrael. If you're not shomer Shabbos, you are a Jew in bad standing, and you do not get the designation of a Yisrael. What we're aiming for, Oisi La'olam, is giving me a sign between God and Israel. What does Israel mean? Israel means those that guard the Sabbath. It's a key. And if you don't guard the Sabbath, you aren't a Yisrael. That's a very special designation in Shemaim for the Jewish people, as and when they keep the Sabbath. Why? Ki sheshes yomim asa Hashem esa Shemaim for esa aretz. Uva yom ha-shavi'i shavas v'yonafash. Because in 6 days, Hashem made the heavens and the earth. And on the seventh, he returned to the spiritual. The Rekayach explained that the extra word S, remember, I think we touched upon this word S before. Ki sheshes yomim osayas es ha-shamayim for es ha-aretz. Remember we talked about it includes everything in it? If you say S, it means everything in heaven and everything on earth. Refers to all the various creations created everywhere. It isn't just that he created heaven and then someone came along and made the angels. Or he created earth and someone made dogs. And he populated the dog. The earth was there, God made that, and someone made something else. No. Every atom, every particle, every molecule, every force, every wave, everything was made by God in the 6 days of creation. That's it, the whole lot. He didn't miss anything. You know, oh, he can't make custard. You know, no, it's there. I've got all the concepts are there. He says the sea isn't mentioned. He made the heavens and the earth, but it doesn't talk about the oceans. And 2/3 of the world is ocean. What's going on there? It is mentioned in the verses of the Ten Commandments. He says, don't cover anything. I made all the world and the seas and everything. You're not allowed to worship anything which is in the earth or the sea or anything like that. But when he talks about Shabbos, he doesn't mention the sea. Why not? Answer is, the heavens and the earth are the main domains of the world. But the sea is not a public or private domain. It's a karmelis, as we were learning earlier today. It's a karmelis, which is like a rabbinic domain of Shabbos. It's not a regular domain. It's not a place which has been set aside for human habitation. It's just not. Man's main pursuits are either on earth, in this world, or in Shemaim, from which emanate the spiritual influences that perfect his actions and pursuits. The sea generally is not where people hang out. That's not where you're going to find humans. I'm not saying there aren't humans in the sea and on the sea, but if you're at sea, the likelihood is you could get to the middle of the sea, see blue in all directions and no people. People don't hang out on the sea. That's not where people generally live. The Maharal explains this is why fish have no specific names in the Torah. If you go through the parshas where we learn about the animals, HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks about the birds and the animals with specific breeds, species. Any raven after its kind. He actually mentions different animals and different birds. He just says fish. The only thing we know about them is fins and scales. Kashkesh is for snap here, right? All we care about is, do they have the two signs, kosher or not? He doesn't say the salmon and all its kind are kosher. the tuna and all its kind of sharks and all that. He doesn't mention them. Whales and all those kinds and porpoises and false orca are not kosher. He doesn't mention that. Just says, has it got fins and scales? Yeah, it's good. It doesn't finished. Why is that? That's because they're not named or categorized, because fish are separate from people. They don't share our domain. Now, a name connotates an interaction between an object and the one referring to it. That doesn't really exist with fish because you don't have such an interaction with them. In Vishomru, when we're talking about Shabbos, as it relates to the Jewish people, the C is omitted. But in the Seres Dibros, where Shabbos is described in its intrinsic nature as the day of the culmination of the creation of God's standpoint, then the creation of the sea is mentioned as well, because it's in the world too. God made everything, including the sea. But as far as you're concerned, you don't need to worry about it. Now it says, this is great, you're going to like this. It's coming up to a worth coming moment. We're coming a worth coming moment. Try to tune in just for a bit, and then I'll tell you to zone out on in a minute. The verse says, for in 6 days Hashem made heaven and the earth. Notice, he didn't say in 6 days. It says, ki sheshes yomim osa Hashem es Hashem. It says, for 6 days Hashem made the earth. If you really want to translate that, it doesn't translate very well at all. If you translate this not... I wonder how he translates it. Yeah, no, he translates it incorrectly. It says in 6 days in our scroll. That's wrong. It doesn't say but. It doesn't say but. It says key. Because of 6 days made God the heavens and the earth. It's because of the 6 days. It's because of the 6 days. It's not in 6 days. He's not in it. It's because of it. This is key. You lose it in translation if you try. Obviously for flowing English, it's correct to chuck the word in. Because otherwise... I will not really understand the flow of it. It'll be a bit clunky. But really, if you look at the words, it's for 6 days God created the heavens and the earth. Not in 6 days. Says the Rambam, these six periods of 1,000 years that the world will exist were already potentially created in the 6 days of creation. For the 6 days, 1,000 years each, that the earth is going to be created. That's why I'm creating the earth. I'm creating the earth for the 6,000 years the Jews are going to be in it. For the 6 days, the 6 days, a divine day is 1,000 years. It says in Tehillim, 90. Right, 1,000 years, but a single day. What does that mean? 1,000 years, that means from 0 to 1,000 is Sunday. 1,000, 2,000, Monday. 2,000, 3,000, Tuesday. 3,000, 4,000, Wednesday. 4,000, 5,000, Thursday. 5,000, 6,000, Friday. Where are we at? 5, 7, 8. Oh, 5, 7, 8. That takes us to Friday afternoon on the divine week. We're not yet plug a mincha, if you add it up, but we're Friday afternoon. We are definitely getting busy. Any house, Friday afternoon at that stage, it's probably not the time for you to call me up and ask for a game of chess. Now, why is that? The answer is, oh, I've got a brilliant new sec. Do you want to come and you want a game of chess? You know what? Friday afternoon... at about, what, 2, 3:30 in the afternoon, it's probably not the best time for me to sit down and have a good game of chess. Why? I'm busy. What am I doing? I'm preparing for Shabbos. And when Shabbos comes in, everything goes quiet. But what happens up until Shabbos? It actually gets more and more and more bonkers until Shabbos comes in. That's happening in the world. The world will literally go more and more and more bonkers until Shabbos comes in. So it's actually going to get busier and busier and more hectic until the culmination. God says, for those 6 days, 6,000 years of human history that he's concerned about, I made the universe. For in those 6 days, it's for those 6 days that Hashem made the heaven and the earth. The Vilna Gaon explains that even if you count it down, the hours, I've done the years, right? If you look at the hours, also correspond to portions of those thousands of years comprising the full day, approximately 42 years per hour. If you work it out, it's about 42 years per hour. So every hour in God's plan is about 42 earth years. If 1,000 years is one day. So it's a math thing. So every it's amazing. 1 hour. So if God says, I'll see you in an hour, you've got to wait 42 years. Earth years. Do you understand what I'm saying? On his clock. It's amazing, no? And you thought the queues were long at your local. According to, we're running an hour late. 42 years. So according to this calculation, we're now on the sixth day, around the 18th hour, the 19th hour, preceding the ultimate Shabbos. So according to this concept, by studying each day of creation carefully, you can know the potential events that will be contained in each thousand-year period. So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh, quoting the Zohar, says that Hashem created the world for those 6 days. What does that mean? It's got the ability only to exist for 6 days. I created the world for 6 days. How long does it mean? 6 days. Not that I created it for the 6 days because I created it for those 6,000 years. I only created it for 6,000 years. I only created it for 6,000 years. How long have you made that model for? For a week. And I'm going to smash it down. It says, ki shesh shesharim, for 6 days. No more. There'll only be 6 days. He's telling you, this ki shesharim, after 120. God, how come you didn't really tell it? Ki shesh shesharim, I made it for 6 days. That's all. You're in 5780. You're coming up to the end of 6 days. Now, I did tell you that according to Oishis Rebbe Akiva, Parshas Vayis Chanan, that 6 days is actually 6,093 years. The 93 is rounded down by the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's not exactly 6,000 years, it's 6,093 maximum. But hopefully we'll bring Mashiach before that anyway, so all that's academic. But technically, if we don't, it goes to 6,093. We learn that out from the word Vayis Chanan equaling 515, the number of years that Moshe Rabbeinu davened for Klal Yisrael in Golos. So it's 515 Jubilee years. So we learn out that goes to 6,093. So the end date for the Messiah is 6,093. But hopefully he'll come much, much earlier than that. But that's the absolute curtains. That's what Yaakov did not reveal to his children was 6,093. We learn that out from Oishis Rebbe Akiva on Parshas Vayis Chanan.
So what do we learn from this? That the world is not going to exist after this, after that?
Not in the same way.
Not as we know it.
Not as we know it. It's got to exist, but not...
Don't worry, you won't be around.
Take that back. Of course there'll be a rat. I thought there was camaraderie in this group.
Well,
Shabbos recharges the energy of the world and enables it to exist for another 6 days. He says like this, God made 6 days, then he made a Shabbos, which means without a Shabbos, you can't have the 6 days. You need the Shabbos to re-energize the 6 days. If you don't have the Shabbos, you can't have the 6 days. Those 6 days only work on the concept of a Shabbos. We discussed this, remember the idea of keeping two Shabbosos?
Yes.
If a guy just starts keeping Shabbos for the first time in his life, he's never kept a proper Shabbos. Even though he kept a brilliant Shabbos. Why? Because Shabbos is meant to follow 6 work days. But for him, it followed 2,000 work days. So that first Shabbos he kept isn't a proper... Really now he needs a week of 6 days with the Shabbos at the beginning, followed by a Shabbos. So you need two Shabbosos to keep one Shabbos. Do you get that? Because a real Shabbos follows 6 work days. Mm-hmm. If it's your first ever Shabbos, it hasn't followed 6 work days. It's followed...
So this thing that they're doing with this Shabbos, everyone's keeping that one Shabbos is...
Well, you need two. You need two. Yeah, you need two. So keep the next one as well. Okay. There you go. That's my top tip there. Keep the second Shabbos as well, and you can bring your Shabbos.
We're learning the locker, aren't we? Unless you know how to keep it.
It's tough. That's true. You cannot keep Shabbos. The Chofetz Chaim explains, if you do not learn the laws of the Sabbath, there's no way you can keep it.
So people even think
they think they're Shabbos. Yeah, look, Alavai, all Klal Yisrael should think they're Shabbos. Alavai. Most Jews don't necessarily think of themselves like that. But let's say they did, that'd be fantastic. But then if you actually scrutinize and go, well, do you know the Lamentes Melachos? They'll be like, what? So, you know, like, what's that? You know, okay, Shabbos recharges, they've already done that. Shabbos is the Makor HaBrocha. It's the source of blessing. And the Rekeach says that these 6 days correspond also to the 6 orders of the Mishnah. There's 6 orders of the Mishnah. 4 orders, interestingly, have a Gemara in the Bavli. And 2 of them, Zeraim and Taharis, don't. And the Kerch says that on 2 of the 6 weekdays, we've got Kriya Satira, Monday and Thursday. And therefore, those days do not need a Gemara to strengthen their Mishnah. That's a very interesting idea. That's why there's 2 of the 6 orders of the Mishnah aren't related to a particular Maseches in Bavli, because our Kriya Satira energized them. Interesting thing. Oh, I've got to give you this one. You'll like this one. Atbash. You know Atbash? Atbash is where you take the Aleph to a Sof. base to a shin. So have like an A, B, C, D going with A, B, C, D and meet them. So you can, the whole Torah can be read by Atbash. It's a code that's used. Atbash of Sheshes, which means six ki Sheshes Yomim. So shin, shin, sof is Atbash, base, base, aleph. Which are the first letters of the words Bereshis, Bara, Elohim. In the beginning, God created. The 6 days were really contained in that first moment, ex nihilo. So Bara, Bereshis, Bara is Sheshes. In the beginning, he created. The word Bara created is the six. What's the six? Shabbos, the 6 weekdays. Notice the word Bara Shis means he created six as well. Shis is Aramaic for six. So he created the content. Also, shis also means veil or mask. So he created a mask with which to hide himself in the world. Another idea there with the content of six. Six, of course, being the six sides of a cube. The physical world is six. Seven is what's inside the cube. Okay. We've got to new words. You don't get this very often. V'yom ha-shavi'i shavas v'yunofash. On the seventh day, he ceased creating and he rested. Now, what's going on here then? The Mephoshim say that this verse contains redundancy in its mention of the word shavas. Why say uviyom hashavi'i shavas v'yinofash? Just say uviyom hashavi'i yinofash. On the sixth day he rested. What's this shavas? And v'yinofash, which also means rest. Really means shavas, he rested and he rested. Yeah, God can't be refreshed. That's a bad translation. God can't be refreshed because he can't be sallied or tired. Yeah, whatever. The Lekach Toiv sees this as an expression of the dual nature of Shabbos. What's going on? Shabbos is described by the Torah as Shomer V'Zochor. And we learned that means you've got to guard the halachas and you've got to keep the spirit of Shabbos together. You can't do either one without the other. You can't keep the spirit of Shabbos without the halachas and you can't do the halachas without the spirit of Shabbos. It just doesn't work. It's just empty. In fact, the last letters of the words B'yom HaShavi'i Shavas V'Yinofash spell Shtayim, which hints at the dual nature of Shabbos. Isn't that great? Shtayim. Two is Shavas. Isn't that great? That's great. It's good, this stuff, isn't it? I like it. Anyway, sorry. How can I? Okay, yeah, it's not terrible. It's like I'm standing at the front going, oh, this is really good. You're like this. Oh, for goodness sake. Sorry. I'm sorry. Take that out. Edit that out. The Medrash HaGadol, Shemois Lamed Aleph Yud Zayin, that's 31:17, which we did quote earlier, explains that Shavas refers to the actual cessation of work, while V'Yinofash refers to Hashem achieving his desire in the purpose of creation by creating the universe. So Rashi says that Shavas refers to the cessation of creative activity, and by ceasing the activity, God was refreshed, as it were. That's a reflection of how Shabbos affects human beings. I.e., Shavas refers to the effect of cessation on the object being worked on. I'm building a bell. Have you done it? Yeah, I've built a bell. Now I stop building the bell. That is called Shavas. I have stopped manufacture of the object. That's a concept of Shavas. V'yinofash refers to the person that stopped. Shavas is the bell has stopped undergoing creative activity. V'yinofash, and I have completed that which I set out to do, which was to create a bell. So V'yinofash goes on the doer, and the Shavas goes on the thing that's being acted upon. You hear this? That's the Medrash. That's the Medrash HaGadol. The Dover Sholem says that Shavas refers to the act of the cessation of labor, while V'yinofash refers to the spiritual effect that has on the soul of the one who refrains from activity. V'yinofash is, when I don't do malachas on Shabbos, what does it do to me? It V'yinofashes me. That's what it does. But Shavas is always on the actual act. Rav Shish Raphael Hirsch doesn't give it. It's always the best, isn't it? It's always the best. I like him the best. He's my favourite. I like Rav Shish Raphael. Rav Shish Raphael Hirsch, every time he says it's like a pearl of... Not that everyone else isn't brilliant. Rav Shisha Raphael Hirsch says that V'yinofash connotes that one returns to himself and is refreshed through the rest. Similarly, Hashem, by ceasing creation, returned to his essence prior to being a creator. God was still God before he made anything. When he stopped making things, he was like what he was before he made things.
Retired.
No, you can't retire. No, that's silly. That's silly. I'll say it again. No. Because before you start work, you're not retired. You're not retired, then get a job, and then you re-retire. What we're talking about is God never made anything prior to making anything. So God was God in his most pure essence, whatever that means, before he did anything. Do you know what I mean? We respond to him as a creator. Why? Because he made something. When he finished making it, what is he now? He's what he was prior to being a creator, which is really what he is all the time.
Was he not everything all the time?
Now, good. Very, very good. Very good. Really, we're outside the concept of time. And really, that means God's creating and not creating all at the same time. That's true. That's true. And that's something our minds can't boggle with. However, the concept is that the fact that God creates something isn't an intrinsic necessity in his being. He just exists. And if he didn't make anything, he wouldn't be any worse off. He'd be completely fine. Now, when he decided, for whatever reason that we can't fathom, we can't know why he wanted to, because he didn't need to, when he decided to make something, he becomes a creator. Now, that is a new job title. Okay, we interrupt this year for a musical interlude. Amazing. Can I ask that all people turn their phones off? Not to silent, but off. This is a request not just for now, but for all future Shirim. For the next 50 years of Shirim, I will have to renew this in the next Jubilee year.
I did answer a rabbi's call.
You should have told him I'm in a shir, and he'll probably tell you shouldn't have answered it. Okay, no. Let's do this again. We have to go back, because when you take a step away from Tyra, you've taken two steps away from Tyra. So now we need to take two steps back into Tyra. So let's do that. Just like this. God is only a creator vis-a-vis the creation. If there was no creation, he would not be the creator. But that would in no way take away anything from who and what he is. He just didn't create anything. Now that he has decided, for whatever reason, to make something, because he wants to, then he is a creator, because he has created something which is not him. Is everyone with me so far? Yeah. When he finishes that creation business, because creation includes time, and we can say the word finishes from there on in, that means he goes back. Those are wrong words. You're right. Yeah. He is now more understandable by us as something which is no longer creating anything. It's really tough on the words, isn't it, there? And he's not creating anything, just like he wasn't creating anything before he created anything. You get the idea. The point is, what does it mean, and he returned, shovas v'nafash? He returned to what he was before doing anything, which is who he was before he decided to make the universe. Which is, that's what it means when he stopped work. He's what he was before he began it. Aye, but he lives outside time and you can't say... Yeah, I know, but we don't have any words. And it is right for us to try to approach the creator with words, because he did, in his infinite wisdom, give us a set of words to approach him with. The Torah, at the end of the day, is a literature. There are over 300,000 words in the Sefer Torah spread across 5,845 verses. So it is fair for us to utilize words, because that's all we got. Are those words clunky and don't define him? Yes, but we've got to do the best that we can. So fair's fair. We can't just sit here and meditate and go, just get this... Can't do that. I've got to use words, right? Those words are clunky when talking about the creator. But yes, this concept of Shavuot finish, it says Rav Shavuot Hirsch, is he goes back kind of to being what he was prior to this whole creational business, which is, that's awesome. That's why he went back. He went back to fit it. Well, I'm not doing anything now. Does that make sense? It's a beautiful concept. It's a beautiful concept. The Ian Tefillah relates that when Hashem created the world, he caused matter to be created ex nihilo. Whenever, if we use a Large Hadron Collider or something like that, they make all kinds of new matter now. They've got all these, if in the periodic table, there's a whole new bar of made-up elements, Americanium, Berkelium, Einsteinium, What they do is they take other metals like lead or iron, literally like alchemy, and they smash them with additional protons and make them bigger atoms with more electrons, and they call them a new element, which is true. It's a new element. They're making new elements. Got news for you. You have to use protons to do it.
You have what?
That you have to use a proton to do it. Oh. Get your own protons. Oh, I'll get it from somewhere. No, you make them up. Well, from what? God got his own proton. There were no protons. When he had to make the original proton or atom, he had to make them out. There weren't any atoms to make any other atoms from. They weren't always just hanging about. He had to make the concept of matter. Bereshis Bara Elohim, Esa Shemayim Ve'esa Aretz could be retranslated in the beginning. God created energy and matter. Shemayim being energy, Aretz being matter. So he had to create matter and energy to start with to make other stuff. This is making sense. So he had to make something. Originally, there was no energy. He had to create energy that we know. He had to do that, right? So at that point of the formation, they only had their individual existence. There's energy, there's atoms, but they had no soul. Vayinofash literally means he bestowed a nefesh, a life force, upon this matter and energy. And because the word vayinofash is derived from the word pash, posh, peishin, which means to increase. The ability for atoms to increase and become larger molecules, for creatures to be able to reproduce, is vayinofash. And that ability to reproduce wasn't introduced until the concept of Shabbos, that it should be a self-sustaining creation. God had to make the world, constantly putting in day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. When Saturday came along, he pulled away and said, no, what does that mean? But everything's carrying on. The world didn't end, it's still here, right? The sun's still here. But God has made it a self-sustaining system. That self-sustaining system is the concept of vayinofash. He gives it his own life force to carry on without his direct input. Do you hear this? It's alive, the universe is alive now. Because it doesn't need constant going, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, CPR, I went out, breathe. He's done all that, now he's up. Adam and Rishon is up and about. The whole system can now exist on its own energy, as it were, within the system that God gives it, from vayinofash, by being breathed in a soul to the universe. That's the concept of vayinofash. Shavas, he stopped putting in the work, vayinofash, and put in the life force of the universe into it so it can self-exist. Come on, that was a worth coming moment.
No, it wasn't. Don't like it.
All right, next words. Look, this is not just next words. You should all rejoice. We're crossing the paragraph divide. It's like crossing a great ocean. We've done the Atlantic. Let's do the Indian Ocean. This is a completely different theme. This now feels like a different ocean. My wife tells me that she went on holiday as a child to Cape Town. Many people in Joburg do that. If you live in Joburg, you go to Cape Town. If you live in Cape Town, you go to Plattenberg Bay, because that's where it's really nice. I was once offered the job of Rabbi of Plattenberg Bay, and my wife's friend says, you have to take that job. That is like paradise. It's only there 6 months a year. Everyone just only comes in just for holidays. But it's like, that's where the people in Cape Town go when all the people in Joburg come in. They don't want to be there. They go somewhere nice. They go to Plett. Okay? So that's what's so. Now, if you go, that's really special over there. It's like lagoons and everything. Now, if you go to Cape Town, because she's from Joburg, she says you can actually see the difference in the oceans because you're at the tip where the Atlantic and the Indian meet. All the great white sharks come there to breed as well. So it's very, very dangerous to go swimming there. The great whites are all there. All of them are there. Tens of thousands. Every great white shark breeds at the tip of Cape Town. So you can see there's two different... The Atlantic, she tells me, is colder and darker blue. And the Indian is a slightly lighter blue and warmer. And she says you can actually see where the two oceans merge and you can literally put your foot in both oceans. It's like an amazing thing to... Sounds like an interesting thing to do, doesn't it? So you can actually see it, right?
Where's this? In Cape Town?
Yeah.
Or in this plot?
In Cape Town.
I actually saw that with Dave Attenborough. You know, he was showing...
If you can't go there yourselves, you can ask David to do it for you. Now, what's happened here is why I'm telling you any of this, is that we've moved from the Atlantic, which is the whole Vashom of Israel, God made all the world and Bris stuff, to the concept of who we gave it to and the difference between Jews and Gentiles. It's like a different ocean. This stuff feels... Now, when you're davening on Shabbos, which is why we're here, to make a difference to our tefillahs, not just to take up our Monday nights. Where I've got nothing else to do. It's like OT. So when you've occupational therapy, when you've finished for Shomru, you're now entering a new realm. And that's this whole Veluna Satay business. You've finished the concept of God being creator and stopping all that business and the life force of the world and Jews and the Bris and everything like that. Now you're into, why did he give it to us and not them? What's going on in social human circles? Totally different feel to this bit. And when you start davening Veluna Satay, not just getting through because you want to get home for dinner, you've got three or four sentences here which are specifically talking about your differentiation socially, historically, and from a paleontological perspective, as the difference of people between the Jews and the Gentiles. It's a totally different feel. You should feel that as you go from one paragraph to another. Here we go. You have not given Shabbos, Hashem, our God, to the nations of the lands, nor have you bequeathed it, our King, to idol worshippers, and its rest the uncircumcised do not dwell. Now, interesting, the Rambam doesn't include this paragraph here. He puts it in Musaf. In his Siddur, you don't say this. And it's in the Musaf. The Eliyarabba says that the words Nasatai, you have not given it, is masculine. And that's always used during the day. And Shabbos at night is always refers to in the feminine. In which case, this whole paragraph, according to the Rambam, belongs only in the daytime prayer of the Musaf. That's an interesting concept. But that's not a minhag, and we've got to say that we are saying it here for a reason, so we've got to delve into it. The Rekayach explains that the future reward of Shabbos was not given to the nations of the world who cannot grasp its significance. The Kedusha, the sanctity of the Sabbath, is not the inheritance of idol worshippers who are the antithesis of holiness. I was just giving a shiur, and one of the ladies in the shiur says, in the next world, will archbishops and priests, high-level priests, be in Olam Haba? Excellent. The Sheva B'mitzvahs B'nai Noach, which are the universal human laws, the seven Noachide laws, which Gentiles must adhere to, that's Torah for export, as it were, that's Torah for Gentiles. One of those is your... That's true. It's Torah for Gentiles. That's what they learn. That's why they got one of these, by the way. The angel hits you over here before you're born to make you forget your Torah. Gentiles have this too, you know? This little mark in the lip. Because they learn their Torah in the womb. It's a lot of Torah. How many mitzvahs are... We got 10, they got 7. We got the Seser Dibris, they got Sheva B'mitzvahs B'nai Noach. But in that 10, we got 613 mitzvahs. In their 7, they've got between 160 and 240 mitzvahs. Don't steal. Well, that's all of Chosh and Mishpat. That's a Dan Berger thing. Like, that's all of those mitzvahs. Bless the name. That's all of Hilchus Tefillah. Don't do the Avodah Zarah. That's all Hilchus Avodah Zarah and all Mesechus Avodah Zarah. Eva Minachai, that's all cruelty to animals and certain dietary laws. How many mitzvahs are there for a Jew now that we don't have a base of Mikdash? Between 160 and 240. Which is the same number as a Gentile would have with the Sheva B'mitzvahs B'nai Noach anyway. They've got to keep the same as us number-wise now that we don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So many mitzvahs revolve around the concept of Beis HaMikdash. All Kabbalahs, everything. Shemit, all these things we can't do properly today. We're keeping a quasi-Judaism.
It's interesting, so we've got all this, and we've got this extra capacity in our neshama to do the extra mitzvahs, which we can't do. We've got Beis HaMikdash.
Good reason to sit on the floor and cry about it, isn't it? Which is exactly what you're meant to do. You've got to sit on the floor and go, I can't believe it. I'm like a Formula One car going up and down town. Yeah. I'm going back in here from Prestwich. I've got news for you. I need to be on the streets of Monaco zipping around at 300 miles an hour. And what am I doing? I'm idling going up and down the road. Come on. Give me my track. You've got to give me my destination. You don't put a Formula One car in, like, you know, Halford's car park. You've got to push me to... I've got to be used. I'm not being used properly in Golas. So, are there going to be archbishops? No, there are not. They are the antithesis of Kedusha. They don't belong there. Doesn't mean they're not going to be Goyim. Be plenty of Goyim, but no archbishops. Rav Hertz Schatz explains that Shabbos wasn't given to the 70 nations that inhabit the 70 lands, nor was it bequeathed to the 70 spiritual powers, all those who did Derech Hashem. In section 2, we learnt out from Amos, chapter 3, only you have I known from amongst the nations of the earth. What does that mean? Hashem has organised a divine agent, a sar, a malach, an angel, which is the minister of that particular nation to each of the 70 nations. And there's one malach which looks after the affairs of that entire nation, which is why nations are so patriotic. When they're patriotic, they're strengthening the actual national malach. That's actually what they're doing. So if you, let's say the malach of England, I think I've discussed this with you before, is Britannia. Let's call her Britannia. That's the malach, right? It's her job to get the best deal she can for the people under her remit from God at the AGM. Every Rosh Hashanah. That's her job. She's having problems. Every year, different angels. And if there's bickering between malachim upstairs, Chazal say that manifests as war here on earth. It's those malachim fighting it out. Now, Klal Yisrael doesn't have a malach. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is our guardian. He knows us directly because we know him directly. Fair's fair, right?
Sorry, but in my siddur it says Mikael, Sar Yisrael.
Very good. The Ritva on Rosh Hashanah says that when Israel are on the level, Hashem himself is our guardian. But if we are not on the level, he hands over remit to the Archangel Michael. Which means a Yid can be judged as a Goy. What does it mean a Jew has the din of a Goy? It can mean that a Jew has the same din of a Goy in the fact that God will interface with him through a Malach rather than directly. What's the best way to get the din of a Goy? Break Shabbos. By breaking Shabbos, you're putting yourself underneath the remit of Michael, not the remit of God. That's how it works. It has spiritual ramification. That means there's very little difference between a Jew and a Gentile. In fact, the Gentile will say, well, my archangel is Britannia, your archangel is Michael, my Nafkamina. Let's all assimilate together. We're exactly the same as each other. What difference is there? This was Esav's offer to Yaakov when he met him, said, let me accompany you. Let's go together. We'll walk together. Yaakov said, no. My children go at a slower pace, i.e. for the sake of my children, I don't want them to assimilate with you. That's what was going on there. That was a big discussion. Yaakov says, now we're friends again. Let's all become one happy family. He goes, no, we have different worldviews. We're not one happy family. We're a separate caste. Remember, the only way a Jew can truly be considered a Jew is if they're separate. That's the concept of the rose amongst the thorns. The Chasam Sofer says, how do you get a rose amongst the thorns? Why are they not ripped to bits? Goes, because there's distance. The rose amongst the thorns is saying Shir Shim, and under the chuppah, the chasan and kala, according to like a rose amongst the thorns and the beautiful tefillahs that we say, so you can only have a rose amongst thorns if there's a little bit of a gap. Hashem has to separate us out through the concept of mitzvahs.
Kedusha, no?
That generates that Kedusha. Where are we holding? Oh.
Go for it. Time.
Can we go over by just a couple of minutes and then I'll stop?
Yeah.
Because we did have a few interruptions. The Dover Shalom says there are three designations here, if you look at it very carefully. One is it says nations of the world. He didn't give it to nations of the world. Number two is he did give it to idol worshippers. And number three is he didn't give it to people without circumcision. Just say Goyim. Why are you splitting it up like this? This refers to three aspects of Shabbos represented by the ultimate Shabbos. Listen to this. The Shabbos of creation was not given to the nations of the world. The Shabbos of Matan Torah was not bequeathed to idol worshippers. And the uncircumcised cannot dwell in the Shabbos of Olam Haba. Let's talk about this and then I'll stop. The Shabbos of creation was a sign that God created the world and it's above the world and its physical laws. Those who occupy and relate only the physical world were not given that sign because they don't accept it. They say the physical world is theirs, and this is what it's all about—the physical world, man. It's bread on the table. It's what you can see. It's what's in front of you, and that's it. And okay, so you don't get Shabbos because Shabbos is looking at that as to what it will give you spiritually. The Shabbos of Matan Torah refers to the aspect of the Shabbos as Yerusha, an inheritance, which is part of the Torah that reveals its purpose. What's the purpose of the Torah? That every physical thing is only there to be used in the service of Hashem. Those who worship idols negate that entire concept, therefore they have no share in the inheritance of Shabbos. And lastly, the Shabbos of Olam Haba is the result of the observance of the Shabbos of Olam Hazeh, and the close relationship with Hashem has with the Jews and the essence of the world. Those who are uncircumcised, what does that mean? Those who have a separation between them and God, a barrier that deters them from an uninhibited relationship directly with Hashem, can't dwell with Hashem so closely. In this respect, that's the merit of Bris Milah. That's the symbol of Bris Milah. That I'm removing the barriers. By the way, those barriers can be barriers in your heart. We're going to talk about later, what about Jews that have Bris Milah, but they're not considered to be Jews? What happened to their Bris Milah? Their Bris Milah means they've still got a Bris Milah around their heart. They've got to remove the barriers between them and Hashem in order to be able to gain these things. That's why we say, V'loi nasatai Hashem elokeinu. You did not give Hashem l'goy ha'aretz to all the Gentile nations that do not see you as a power in the world or the creator. V'loi hinchaltai malkeinu. And you did not give over our king l'ovdei v'silim to those who worship idols, who see physicality as something to worship. Because physicality is only something to utilize in worship, not to be worshipped. And you didn't give the Yerusha, the ultimate Yerusha is, Olam Haba, to those who are circumcised, to those who have a barrier between you and them, because Olam Haba is all about barrierless closeness to Kodesh Baruch Hu. This is the concept of Shabbos. All the ideas of Shabbos are linked in with all the ideas of Tyre. That's why one who keeps the Shabbos is like, get the whole Torah. One who transgresses the Shabbos knowingly is like, he broke the whole Torah. Because all the concepts are kind of whirlpooled onto one point where Shabbos, Torah, Bris Milah, all of that is one idea. It's just one idea. You know what? The whole Torah was said all at once by God to everyone at Har Sinai. And he had to go back and say, there's so certificates one by one. That's what he had to do. He said, the whole, what? I know, yes, every word was said. And we heard every word. It was like, then he had to go back. And said, why? Because the whole Torah is one idea. It's just one idea. Be close to me. So, Anochi Hashem. I'm the Lord your God. Everything else is perish. That's it. That's the whole Torah. Anything you're ever learning in the Torah is only that idea. The whole thing. It's only one idea. God's only one. He's got one idea. Be close to me. That's it. How do you do that? Well, on Saturdays, you don't do this. With cows, you do that. With, I don't know, with metal things, you do this. With houses, you do that. With meat, you do this. With, I don't know, with sukkahs, you do that. With glass, you do this. This is how you do when you want to do it. You want to look at specifics. How do you tie your shoes? How do you wash yourself? How do you go to the toilet? There's all ways to get close. You've got to work with everything. But what's all the idea? What's it all coming back to? Closeness, a relationship. It's all, that's it. So have a relationship with me. That's all. That's it. That's it. That's the entire vocation of Judaism. There's no more to it. It's a vocational lifestyle to develop the closest relation possible with the infinite creator of the universe, utilizing physicality as a medium. That's Judaism. There's nothing more to it. Everything else is just detail. Really, it's just a detail, right? Shabbos, Bris Milah, and Olam Haba are all one idea. They're just things removing barriers between us and the Creator. That's it. Now, if you say, well, I don't agree with any of that, then you lose Shabbos, Bris Milah, and Olam Haba. Because it isn't as if you're losing all three. It's one idea. Look, a guy who's married a woman, let's pretend here, yeah? That, okay, she cleans his clothes. This is terribly, I don't mean to be sexist in any way. She cleans his clothes, let's say. She looks after his children and she cooks him dinner. There's a terrible thing. I'm not saying that's what women, let's say she does do that. Let's say that there are women, by the way, that do this for their husbands. Yeah. I just want to say that, right? Really, I know.
Now you're pushing it. You some things tonight.
Let's say you've got a man that marries a woman like that. In that marriage, those three things are all one concept for her. Those are duties she feels as if she wants to fill in her marriage, if she so wants to do that. If you lose the marriage, you lose all those three things. Isn't this if you lost those three things? That's the marriage. You're losing everything. You're losing all the closeness, all the intimacy, all the wonderfulness, all the clothing, the food, everything. That's called the marriage. It isn't as if, I really miss the Friday night that you should put. That's because you missed the marriage. If you want the marriage, you get everything. If you don't want the marriage, you don't get it. It's all one idea. If you want Shabbos, you get the Torah, Bris Milah, Olam Haba. If you don't want Shabbos, you don't get Bris Milah. It's all interconnected. You can't peel this apart and go, I'll keep Shabbos, I like that, but Bris Milah's silly. It's ridiculous. If you understand the concept of Shabbos, you're never going to not want Bris Milah. If you understand the concept of Bris Milah, you're never not going to want Shabbos because it's an overlaid idea. That's like, I want marriage, I just don't want to live with a woman. That's crazy. You don't understand. If you want to live with a woman, you want a marriage. If you don't live with a woman, do you understand what I'm saying? You can't separate these concepts out in the Torah. Do you understand what I'm saying? Is this making sense? Yeah. That's what it means. You didn't give it to the goyim of the world. You didn't give it to the psilim, the people who worship idols, and you didn't give it to those who aren't so great. Because that's all one idea. Well, Shabbos doesn't fit. Because something that Shabbos represents ain't jiving with one of those groups. It's one idea. I want to have a moment with you. Real Kabbalah cannot be taught. All you can do is give over a feeling in the other person's heart and mind, which they understand, but is not you can't put it over into words. If you can bring someone utilizing texts, Kabbalistic form, or whatever, to bring them to that, then you've really taught them secrets. A real secret can't actually be said, because if it can be said, it's not truly a secret. Something truly secret cannot be uttered. People, why are you here? You're here because you want a high level of closeness in your tefillah. All these tools that we're going through, everything I've ever done with you, on any of it, is only to give you a feeling of closeness with Hashem. To enhance that. How would you put that into words? The truth is, you can't. You're totally, completely personal feeling of love that you've got between you and Hashem. Boobies! This is what you're working at. This is where the money goes. This is where your time goes. This is where everything goes here. You're working at this. Oh, Liz, you said this about Vishomru, and it's a lovely idea about Shabbos. It's a Vienna fashion, it's all really interesting. No, you don't just, oh, well, I've got all these bits and pieces. And people, you've got to put this into action. You've learned tons and tons, and how many hours this is into Shemona Esrei, but there's tons of really clever ideas in here that brought the Maral and the Abu Draham and all the, we'll put it all together. Oh yeah, whatever. No. That's got to go in your mind, and you have to use that to generate a new feeling of love, which you didn't have prior. That's where this really goes. Now, how are you going to do that with this? The concepts of Gentiles, the concepts of uncircumcised, and the concept of idol worshippers are one concept that negates the concept of Shabbos, Bris Milah, and Olam Haba. Now, when you actually get that, when you think about that and you click it together and you go, wow, what we're really talking about is me standing here on a Saturday night saying these words is an expression of my devotion to all those concepts, which by me being here automatically completely negates those three negative concepts of being uncircumcised, an idol worshipper, and a Gentile, because me being here automatically negates it, because it's all one idea. I don't have to do those three things. I am those three things. I'm doing it. And that's my relationship. I'm in a new relationship post. That feeling is what we're after. That's why we're here. That's why you're around the table.
I'm in a marriage.
You can't say it. You can't say it. It's a feeling of closeness with the Borei Olam that is generated from a practical meditation of these basic wordable concepts that we're doing now. But you have to then use those as springboards to jump up to somewhere I can't tell you. No one can. No one can say the words that will get you there. You must take that's your professional student side of things, is you have to take that concept and then work with it to develop the relationship to make you a closer person to the Borei Olam, merely utilizing these nice ideas you go, oh, so, to think about so you can actually do something with it. Do you know what I'm saying? So you can sit and study mortgages all your life until you take one out and you don't have to repay. And it feels different. Actually having a mortgage and having to repay feels very different from studying about it in business school. You're actually doing it. You've got a mortgage. It's on your head. Right? That's a different feeling. You're standing in the world as a person with a mortgage. Rather than, I wonder if I should get a tracker or an interest only. You're not playing around with it. You have the responsibility. Here, we're learning the Torah concepts behind it so that you get the feeling. People, these are things which can jump you to that feeling. If you utilize this correctly, you have a different relationship with the creator of the universe. I've got news for you. Goyim don't get round in the evening and actually talk about these things. One is because either they don't desire to, or B is, let's say they genuinely desire to, unfortunately for them, we have the complete and total monopoly over all emes to do with the Bayar Olam, says the Elshech HaKadosh. Which means the only way in is either the Shefa Mitzvot B'nai Noach or Torah, which is why they hate us so much. The Elshech HaKadosh says, Har Sinai, Mount Sinai, is Loshon Har Sinai, is Mount of Hatred. The second God said yes to us as a bris, and we said that one of the 10 bris moments that Hashem had was what? Was Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael and the Davidic dynasty, the Kohanim and the Levim, and us and Eretz Yisrael, are one of these covenants he's made. What's a covenant? There's always a profound cut. With time, Shabbos. It's not like the other days. The Torah, profound cut of any other world philosophy. Kohuna, profound cut with every other caste of Israel. The land of Eretz Israel, profound cut with any other territory. The rainbow, profound cut in time to do with destruction. Freeing slaves in Yovel, profound cut to do with your ownership of other people. Bris Milah, profound cut. It's all to do with some kind of segregation. When God said yes to us and we said yes to him at Matan Torah, there's a total segregation. That segregation means only you, says Amos, as I said in the third chapter, have known amongst the other nations of the world. You and me have a special relationship. Now that means you really want to get this. You can. This is a way in. Now, as much as you would study Islam or Buddhism or Taoism or ancestor worship or whatever it's going to be, you will only get the barest possible shadow of anything which is actually really true. And anything which is really true, Mordechai Perlman tells me that he met an individual, a Jew, that went to India and he was learning in a Hindu ashram, and the head Swami there, wherever he is, came up to him and said, what are you doing here? And he said, you know, I want to get closer to spirituality. He said to him, this is an Indian guy wearing a turban, he said, anything we've got that's real is only taken from your Torah. He said, if you really want to get it, go to your Torah. He says, I don't know how you do it, but he says, that's where you're going to find it. Now, Rabbi Perlman said, not every Hindu guru is going to be so erlich. But he says that that's very good emes. He's saying, look, for you, your path, you've got to go to the Torah. I don't have access to that. So I do this. But really, the Torah is it, man. If you go to the occult, by the way, you go to Satanism and witchcraft and all that, the highest possible levels are all done in Hebrew. All straight out the Kabbalah. Stolen from us. You really want it, you can do it. We're here around the table, we're doing this. We've got it. These are like diamond jewels, you understand? Diamond jewels. What are you going to do with them? If you don't make them into a necklace, kind of a bit of a waste of time, isn't it? You've got these diamonds. This is what you've got to do. When you're going to be standing at sharpest night, for Leina Sati, you've got to be thinking, I am an individual that in and of my very being negates all these three concepts just by being here. I don't have to do anything special. I just have to be here. Do you understand that? That leads to a relationship change. That's what we're doing. Remember, Tefillah is only there to align you better with Hashem. Not to ask Hashem for anything. He already knows what you need. It's about you realizing why you're asking him for what you're asking him for. He knows what you need better than you do. The question is, why are you asking him? Do you hear this? That's what we're doing with all the Shemona Esrei. People, it has been truly real. Thank you so much for taking